Welcome back to Mystery Dungeon May. We are now moving away from Pokemon and diving deep into the hardcore item dropping, grid walking weeds of this genre.
That's right. Tonight we're talking about the four Dragon Quest Mystery Dungeon games: Sheeran the Wanderer, Etrian Mystery Dungeon, Chocobo's Dungeon, and more.
Which means we are trading cute pocket monsters for standard fantasy monsters, an angry wanderer, and a bird wearing a saddlebag.
I still can't believe Torneko left his peaceful weapon shop in Dragon Quest IV just to get beaten up by slimes in a randomly generated cave.
Hey, as you and I probably both know, midlife crises hit everyone differently. Some guys go out and buy a sports car, Torneko hoards iron shields from dungeons.
Hey, speaking of midlife crises, Sheeran the Wanderer is the only series where your companion is a talking weasel and your primary cause of death is stubbing your toe on a trap.
Sheeran really looks at a 99 floor dungeon with permadeath and says, "Yeah, that looks like a great spot for an afternoon stroll."
And, if y'all thought regular Etrian Odyssey was stressful enough, Etrian Mystery Dungeon lets a giant DOE boss destroy your entire town if you fail a run.
Because nothing says fun spinoff like absolute crushing municipal bankruptcy.
Thank goodness for Chocobo. At least that little yellow bird brings some upbeat music to the table while you're starving to death on floor 40.
Oh, exactly. Tonight is the ultimate buffet of grid-based punishment, loss of inventory, and absolute chaos.
So hide your items, pack your biggest apples, and check every single tile for traps.
Sit back, everyone, and welcome to the deep end of Mystery Dungeon May.
Silly and they're goofy, mysterious and spoofy. Kenko makes them loopy, the Backtrack family. Their podcast is a blast, talking games from the past. They break down every class, the Backtrack family.
Beat. Defeat. Complete.
They trash things they abhor, and praise things they adore. They never are a bore. The Backtrack family.
Boost Brother! Snake! Snake!
Hello and welcome to RPG Backtrack, your regular deep dive into your favorite RPGs. We are a production of RPGamer.com, bringing you such fine podcasts like RPGcast, your weekly RPG news show, Q&A Quest, your weekly RPG feedback show, and us, your bi-weekly RPG nostalgia show. I am your host, Kelly Ryan, and with me, as always, my podcast partner in crime, the Torneko to my Sheeran, Mr. Matt Mason.
Ah, yes. I feel like in this time of wonderful announcements of games, it is our destiny to have our guest Wheels on here tonight. Hey, Wheels, how you doing?
Nothing. No, I'm good. I'm not facing crushing disappointment or anything.
You'll have to listen to Q&A Quest to get that inside joke.
So I've
But
reviewed like three Mystery Dungeon games. I guess I qualify as an expert.
I've reviewed zero on here, so
I've
I would say
reviewed
you're three
zero.
times more qualified, but you're at that point you're infinitely more qualified.
Let's see, I've reviewed zero, but I've played a bunch, including a bunch of them that apparently aren't official Mystery Dungeon games.
Yeah, there's a lot of those, but they still count mostly.
Mostly.
This isn't the Chunsoft cast. So.
Yeah, I think then you just don't call them mystery, you have to call them roguelikes.
Yeah, at that point, we're in a genre.
Yeah.
Even though they have the exact same mechanic of eating and one tile, one move, and like put it this way, I'm genuinely surprised that Spike Chunsoft doesn't sue more people unless that's one of those design things that can't be copyrighted.
I think it's tough because the Mystery Dungeon games, although they have some like unique mechanics, are still very much derived from directly from Rogue. So I think it's hard to do anything about that.
Yeah, they can't claim to be first
Yeah.
only.
And the thing I appreciate about Mystery Dungeon games, specifically themed spinoffs, is that they kind of bring that game's gimmick to the spinoff. For example, Chocobo's Dungeon having the job system, or Mystery Dungeon having the crushing foe difficulty, or I'm sorry, DOE, DOE.
Yeah, I think they were the DOEs this time, and it was the same thing as the FOEs, like just crushing defeat headed your way. I honestly, that was the reason I quit the game. I think I put 15 hours into the Etrian Odyssey. We'll talk about that in a little bit, and I quit with those stupid DOEs.
I've heard a lot of people have. They're tough. They're meant to
And
crush your
then,
spirit.
well, I'll tell later why it probably wasn't as bad as I thought.
But I'll tell you what, why don't we take a musical break and then just dive right in when we get back.
Sounds good. After these messages, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are talking about the Mystery Dungeon Sans Pokemon, because we did that last week. This series kicked off with Torneko's Great Adventure Mystery Dungeon in 1993. The Dragon Quest co-creator Nakamura, basically, they liked, from what I've heard, that Torneko was such a popular character that that particular creator was also a huge fan of the original, the namesake Rogue on the PC, and basically combined the two and made Torneko's Great Adventure.
Yeah, he wanted to break off and work more on his own. With his he created Chunsoft back in 1984. And then worked with Yuji Horii for golly through Dragon Quest V, at least on the Dragon Quest series, but then wanted to just be doing his own thing. But then when he got to do his own thing, he was like, hey, can I borrow your that guy I love from Dragon Quest IV for a bit? And yeah, started the whole Mystery Dungeon, at least named part of this genre with Torneko. And then they did their own IP with Sheeran and brought in Pokemon and Chocobo as the years went on, and have continued at least one of them to this day.
Yeah, I did not know Spike Chunsoft started, or that was the origin of Chunsoft.
I mean, it was it, he was he had Chunsoft before. I think they had one or two little games back in the earlier 80s, so it wasn't quite the first. I don't even know what this is. Otokisoro, a visual novel, 1992 was their first game, but he was
Oh,
doing
okay.
stuff beforehand in the 80s. So yeah, it was founded in 1984, 42 years ago. And as we're recording on Dragon Quest Day today here in the United States, to put this right in its historical context, we're recording on the 40th anniversary of Dragon Quest. So the fact that Chunsoft was 42 years ago, they must have been doing something earlier.
According to this, Chunsoft did Tetris 2 plus Bombless. Sorry, I just thought that was a weirdly specific bit of trivia there.
According to this, according to Wikipedia, Chunsoft made a game called Jesus. Must have saved the,
Visual. did it save the company?
Visual novel for the PC 88.
It must have, because it got a sequel, Jesus 2.
Apparently, it's an acronym. That's just funny to see on the Wikipedia page. And yeah, I remember I saw the one Torneko game that we got in the United States at Toys R Us, and I ended up picking it up. I don't think I got to play it though.
You're probably better off for that.
Is it bad?
Oh no, the golly, it was grindy as hell. I mean, a lot of these games can be. And you know, the Torneko games, there was three of them. Well, might as well talk about the Dragon Quest branch of the Mystery Dungeon here. So, you know, as we said, 93, Torneko's Great Adventure comes out. And this is right after between Dragon Quest V and VI, I believe. I want to say Dragon Quest V was like 92, and then 95 was Dragon Quest VI. But right around that time, because it's a Super Nintendo one. There is a fan translation out there for this. I remember playing it early 2000s when I first got into more JRPGs. I was a CRPG gamer in the 90s mainly. So Torneko's Great Adventure was one of the first ones I emulated after a while. And yeah, you're just it's Mystery Dungeon, but you're one guy. It's unlike the Pokemon ones, which get party based and everything. Well, obviously this is the first one in the entire Mystery Dungeon subgenre here. So it's the basics. You're a hungry dude going down the dungeon, and I want to say you get the iron. What did he get in the Dragon Quest IV? He got the iron vault so that he didn't lose his money in the Dragon Quest IV. That was one of his chapter three in Dragon Quest IV. Torneko's chapter was that was his goal. One of the early goals in that chapter was get that iron vault. So if you died, you didn't lose half your gold. Because that chapter was all about making as much money as you could. So, Torneko breaks off with his wife and son and starts dungeon diving. And, you know, not a whole lot of story because the whole thing is just keep going down into the dungeon, get farther and farther. And I know the first couple at least had more than one dungeon. And the third one does too. The third one even has some shorter dungeons and a heck of a lot more story. But Torneko's Great Adventure, Torneko Mystery Dungeon. It was, I beat it. It was, whew, it was rough. Fast forward to the PlayStation era, and as I was saying beforehand, one of the two PlayStation games I still own to this day is Torneko: The Last Hope, and this is the only one that got localized officially in the United States. The front cover of it is pretty of its time, too. It is like this whole claymation kind of. You see Torneko and the slime and some monsters behind him. It's of its time. Dragon Quest VII was released shortly thereafter and had some lovely cutscenes of claymation-type people doing very FMV kind of graphics.
I
But,
didn't notice the World of Dragon Warrior at the top of the English release either. That's
yeah, look
funny.
at. Yep, I don't know much if we had any other games that were World of Dragon Warrior. This is still back in the Enix days too, although it would be Square Enix shortly thereafter. I want to say Dragon Quest VII or right around there was one of the end of the whole Enix. Oh no, sorry, this one's got it on it too. Torneko's Great Adventure 3 came out in 2002. The Last Hope, it was PlayStation. It had some more gameplay elements. There is the 99 floor dungeon in this, if I'm not mistaken. It is, whew, it was rough. It was translated by Nob Asagasawara, and he did a lot of the Dragon Quest games of the day, the Game Boy Color ones and whatnot, but he also did the early Pokemon games. He was the translator of the first, gosh, I want to say he might have been up through Diamond and Pearl era. We've had him on Slime Time before. He's a fun person to chat with, but it definitely had a lot of monsters, 130 monsters in this one. And again, it's that mystery dungeon combat. You take a step, the monsters take a step. You are constantly looking for food. We made the joke earlier about, you know, grab your big apples. Well, bread, apples in these games keeps your food meter high enough so you're not constantly running out of your HP running down as you go. He had swords, he had bows and arrows, he had some magic spells in this game. A lot of stuff you had to bring back, if I'm not mistaken, or you had to have a scroll with you to identify what it was. You could pick up an item and, you know, maybe try to use it. wouldn't really know what it was. It was very obscure.
Still a mechanic in the Mysterious Dungeon games to this day.
So Tornekko is eating apples, eating bread. Again, it's another game set after Dragon Quest IV, after that first one. Tornekko returns to his village and is forced to help cure the villagers of a curse that has been placed upon it. So I played through this, and my goodness, I don't know if these days I would have the patience for it. It was hard. It was very difficult. I love some of the critic comments here. Game Informer: an outdated, ugly piece of crap whose silly antics will charm no one. There are so many better RPGs out there.
Yikes.
Next Gen: a primitive turn-based dungeon crawler that takes so many cheap shots it could tick off a Buddhist monk.
Mean, these are funny,
But
but that type of review would persist for this kind of game for a long time. Because
But
it's.
hey, we've got one. We got a shout out here. Mikhail Tidwell of RP Gamer called the game simple but fun, and it was mostly for those who already like rogue games with randomized dungeons. He did, however, find the game to have amusing dialogue, and the music for each dungeon matches it remarkably well.
Someone that almost gets it.
So, I mean, these games are definitely for people that, your normal gamer's not going to pick this up and be like, this is amazing.
I don't know. I think with the popularity of things like Hades and other
True.
roguelites like that, I think there's a bigger audience for this kind of game that there used to be. I think the problem, and this honestly was the problem when I first played one of these, when I played Shirin DS, which is a remake of the Super Nintendo game, like I didn't get it. And it took like listening to a Retronauts way back in the day, kind of explaining like what the whole deal was to finally, and then forcing myself to go back and try it again and re-engage with it to get it. And it's, if you're used to just playing like certain types of RPGs and you go into this, it kind of does the opposite of what you expect. Like you expect to move around and level up and like go to different places, and this kind of game goes the opposite direction.
You gotta
So
learn.
yeah, I get it for sure.
And see, my mystery dungeon, or my rather my rogue trial by fire was Fatal Labyrinth on the Genesis. It apes more the PC game than Mystery Dungeon proper. But it's pretty much the same gameplay mechanics. The graphics suck, and the game is just ball crunching hard. But it sort of taught me how to play games like this, where you can't be just going up to monsters and stabbing them willy-nilly, or just equipping things without checking them out first. You've got to be learn to be patient and use the mechanics to your advantage. So later on, when I started playing proper mystery dungeon games like this, or Azure Dreams, another kind of clone one, it was like, oh yeah, this is just like Fatal Labyrinth. I kind of get it now.
So, moving along the Tornekko timeline, he finally had a Great Adventure number 3 that moved to the PlayStation 2 in 2002. And then, interestingly, I mean, not a lot of games got this treatment, got ported to the GBA 2 years later. Lots of PlayStation 2 getting ported to GBA, right? Maybe more than you thought, but
It's, I mean, get like a different version on GBA maybe, but I'm guessing
yeah.
this that was pretty close to the PS2 game probably.
I was gonna say these games, there's not a lot of you can just shrink the dungeon down to graphic size, or shrink the sprite and whatever. Now, what's interesting about this, I never touched the PlayStation 2 version, but and it's hilarious that I went to look up which episode of Slime Time this was, and sure enough, right there, the Google AI pointed out to me, I believe it was Slime Time 33, way back in like 2021. And the English availability of this game, thank you, AI Overview, says never officially released in the West. However, a dedicated fan translation project led by Sam Steele released a public beta patch in 2021. You can find the IPS patch in the Mystery Dungeon Wiki Discord. To play it, you will need to apply the patch to your own GBA ROM, blah, 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 blah. I got way too deep in that Mystery Dungeon Wiki Discord back in the day. They asked if I wanted to be a mod, and I was like, no, I'm just here because Sam Steele's going to be on my podcast. Like, I only joined it because that's where he was putting it on the Discord and whatever. So this guy, Sam Steele, we talked to him, end up talking to him. He is a British bloke, and he remembers seeing this game at his local game store when he was younger. And turns out, when I first met him and saw him posting about it on the Dragon's Den forums back in 2020, his name was Tiger Mask. And we were talking to him, and he's like, oh, by the way, I'm Sam. You can just call me Sam. And we're like looking into him, and he's talking about it on the podcast. He was like a semi-pro wrestler.
Oh, my God.
Tiger Mask was, yeah. So he's this amateur / semi-pro wrestler and got into the translation scene to translate a Game Boy Advance wrestling game. And then after actually getting all the way through it.
Hold on. Was it a Fire Pro wrestling game by chance?
I bet that sounds very familiar. So, yeah. After doing that, he was like, oh, I remember this other game when I was young. There was a Dragon Quest on my Game Boy Color. And since I don't think he had any love for Turn Echo or anything, but since he'd already done a GBA game, he's like, well, what other GBA games are out there? Oh, look, Turn Echo. Nobody's done this one. I remember Dragon Quest from when I was a kid. So he started working on it. He kept that for a long time. I had a link to his Google Drive where he would update. I think the last time that got updated was in like 2022. And I played through the first dungeon and got to the second part. And I will tell you, this game got pretty deep. You could, there was his son, Torneko's son's in it, and you get to play as him eventually. There were like job classes, if I'm not mistaken, eventually, if you get farther into the game. And the whole game started with him like crashing the ship. I mean, he might as well have been our Ease boy. Who's the
Adol?
Adol. Yep, I almost said Adol, but Adol. He might as well have been him. He gets in a shipwreck and ends up on this island with coconut bikini clad women and whatever. And the first dungeon is, I don't know, four or five floors to get out of and get off the island, and I think you then meet up with your wife and kids. But that as far as the fan translation went, so I never did more than just that part. But it from what I've understand and looked into and watched on stuff, it was a very deep game, like with the job classes and everything. So they even went farther on the PS2 because, you know, for some reason they just loved the chubby Dragon Quest dudes dungeon diving and eating bread and apples. Yangus from Dragon Quest 8 got his own mystery dungeon. You had young Yangus. So little Yangus with his big yellow hat was featured. What year was that? Young Yangus. Well,
I saw this game.
No, 2006. Yep.
I think I saw this.
PlayStation 2.
Sorry.
Nope, you're good.
I think I saw this in a Game Informer back in the day and got really excited.
Same.
And was very upset that it never came out in the US.
Mm-hmm.
Still doesn't have a fan translation either.
No, right? It does not. Ugh. It does not. So it looks like this one you can collect monsters in. So maybe, you know, when did the first Pokemon Mystery Dungeon? Oh, the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon came out the year before. So looks like they might have. Yeah, players can capture monsters with a special jug, use them to attack opponents. You can keep up to 3 monsters in your possession at one time. They can be used special abilities using item through combat experience. They must reach level 4, be given foods they like. So, I mean, you can use a farmhouse late in the game where monsters can be kept. And bread to create new powerful monsters. Oh my goodness, pretty cool. I mean, the art for this one looked really good. And so I can see why, looking in Game Informer, you might get excited by this one. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Yangus was my favorite character in mm-hmm. Dragon Quest VIII, so getting to see more of his story and the girl that showed
little
up.
Red.
Yeah, Red.
Yep.
I was all excited for that.
So, oh, Mori was in it. The monster. Oh, yeah, there he is. He's up near the logo in the game art, too. Mori was the guy that ran the monster fighting arena and always talked with a very innuendo. In Dragon Quest VIII, he told you you never knew your depth of your own pleasure until you learned to play with yourself. Because you could battle like your own team. You could practice and battle against your own team in the monster arena. So, you know, you were playing with yourself. But there was a, yeah, that was the fourth of the Dragon Quest ones. And then that was about it. Young Yangus has been around in little, not quite spin-off, but he's been in like mobile games. And he was, you could play him in Fortune Street. And he had some cards in Dragon Quest Rivals, the card game that was out online. Even had a Switch port for a while.
Not fair.
Oh, I loved that. I played about 10 hours of that game with not understanding a single word, but understanding the mechanics, and that was fun.
So then this series was apparently very popular in Japan. And from what you told me, Matt Nakamura wanted to make a sequel, but didn't want to be beholden to the Dragon Quest IP. So that's how we got Shirin the Wanderer. Basically Mystery Dungeon 2, Shirin the Wanderer.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean technically Shirin is a Dragon Quest character?
No.
Wait. No.
I think it's the other way.
Okay.
Tornico is a Mystery Dungeon
character. The box art kind of looks a little Dragon Questy.
You know, they probably hired... Listen, it's a year later or 2 years later. Who does this guy know after working on Dragon Quest for, you know, 10 years? He knows Dragon Quest people and probably did not hire the friends. The composer for this game is Sugiyama.
Yeah, interesting.
So, you know, he probably called up Toriyama's underling or somebody.
But the
artists, yeah, they were not Sugiyama or whatever.
Toriyama.
Toriyama, yes.
First time I was aware of Shirin the Wanderer was the DS game, which Wheels, you're the Shirin expert.
Yes.
You said that was a remake of the Super Nintendo one?
That is a remake of the original game.
Gotcha. And then we've gotten multiple recent sequels of these.
We have, and apparently they've sold very well, so I would imagine we will not miss any that come out in the future.
Yeah. Which ones have you played?
I have played almost all of them. So obviously the original one I played was the DS game, the remake of one. And that is still really a good way to get into Shirin and kind of mystery dungeons in general and roguelikes, because it's a very like pure experience, I would say. Like it's you die, you lose everything. You go back to the beginning, very beginning. And you start again. But what really helped me get into that game was, like I said, listening to Retronauts. Jeremy Parrish talked about this game a ton and kind of describing it similar to like Super Mario Brothers. Like, you're not, if you think about it less like an RPG and more like something like that, like you die and you start over, but you're not necessarily left with nothing. And yes, there are things that persist throughout, but kind of the idea is you learn from your experience going through. And I know there's a lot of random things that can just destroy you going through a game like this. And it kind of seems unfair, but you really learn a lot and learn how when situations demand you just run away. And yeah, the whole Shirin series is based a lot on Japanese mythology, stuff I'm not really familiar with. But you really don't need to know anything or even honestly pay attention to the story if you don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a very pure experience. A lot of the newer games have like extra dungeons and stuff you can do, but the core experience is you start in a town and you're going all the way to the end and beating a final boss. But what's interesting about the way Shirin does this is in a lot of games, they have things that like to make it easier. There's things that persist between runs. And usually that's like you can upgrade certain things and gradually the game becomes easier. That's kind of like a something true of like roguelites beyond like mystery dungeon games. They do that a lot. But what's interesting about Shirin is it's not like completely transparent about what those things are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'll be going along and you'll meet up with maybe a character who will join up with you and be like a companion as you go along. And after that happens, they'll show up more often and maybe earlier in the dungeon. And in a lot of the games, there's certain things you have to do to unlock certain characters, and that makes the game easier. And then there's mechanics where you can like upgrade weapons and then leave them in a vault, and then eventually even like upgrade the weapon, put it back in the vault, and just kind of keep upgrading it until you're ready to like make an attempt, essentially. And you don't have to use a guide or anything. Like, it's very clear. These things become very clear as you do runs and make your way through the game. And I really think it's a series, if you like this kind of game, it's like the best version of Mystery Dungeon is a sharing game. It's like you don't need a lot of tutorials or anything. It's clear from the get-go. Like, you have to keep your stamina up. There's traps you might run into. If you come to a floor in a dungeon and there's monsters in every direction, you need to run for your life. And just the kind of all the things you'd see in any of the Mystery Dungeon games are here. And I don't know, but yeah, it starts with the Super Nintendo game and then kind of goes off onto other systems from there. Like, the second game I have not played yet, which was an N64 game.
Oh,
of
wow.
All things. Yeah. And then there were some Game Boy games, and then 3 came out for the Wii and the PSP. And that's kind of more like closer to like the Pokemon games and maybe even Etrian Mystery Dungeon, which we'll talk about, because you'll like always have a companion with you, and I think you can maybe take two characters with you in parts of it. I haven't played in a while. And it's not like one dungeon, it's multiple different dungeons you go through.
Okay.
But after that, it kind of goes back to like the one dungeon. Like 4 was like a DS game, and I don't recommend DS and PSP, and I don't recommend playing it in any setting where someone can watch you, because it has lots of problematic stereotypes of Pacific Island people. But yeah, after that, series.
Which one was that?
That's Sheeran 4.
Sheeran 4. I wonder where the timeline is. That near number 3, Tornekko? Because
no,
he was in the Pacific Islander too. That's where he crashed.
No, it would have been later than that, because it was a later DS game. Like, yeah, I'm forgetting. There was a Sheeran DS 2. Like, the first Sheeran DS game is a remake of the original, and Sheeran DS 2 is a remake of, I think, the Game Boy Color game.
I've gotten the Devil's Navel.
Yeah, it's a remake of either the Game Boy Color game or the Game Boy game, one of those.
Because I see Monster of Moonlight Village is a Game Boy game.
Yeah.
And then the Magic Castle of the Desert. There's a Gaiden, Asuka the Swordswoman.
That was for Dreamcast. Let me look it up real quick.
See, this is Wikipedia, so for all I know, this timeline is missing entries.
I don't think it is, though, because I've looked at that before.
Yeah. The Wikipedia article also says that these had rescue passwords.
Yes, a lot of them have that, where you can go and try and rescue someone who's died in the dungeon so they don't lose all their progress. And I think you get some kind of reward for it. I don't remember what it was. Yeah, so let's see. Sheeran 4, the Eye of God and the Devil's Navel. Yeah, I don't see Sheeran DS2 in here. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, so Sheeran the Wanderer, Game Boy 2, the Game Boy Color one, Magic Castle of the Desert, was remade for the DS.
Okay.
That one, none of the other DS games we ever got in English, although 5, which originally came out on DS, eventually came to Vita. We got that one, and that was that game I reviewed. And that, again, is the very traditional Sheeran type game, which, with one major problem that made me dock it a whole half a point, with one of the worst final boss encounters I've ever seen in this type of game. And the reason for that is the final boss can summon more monsters, which, when you're at the end of a game like this and have limited resources, can be an absolute nightmare. And it was absolutely random how many and if it summons monsters.
Yeah, I could that could be DS throwing rage there.
Yeah, Thankfully, since we only got the Vita version, I was able to use the Vita cloud saves to save scum and keep attempting the final boss until that didn't happen, which still took way too many times. Like it was not great. But that game is still very good. But the most recent one is probably the best Sharon game. And
That
that's
would be the Serpent Coil Island.
yes, it's a lot easier in general, and just has lots of friendly features, looks nice. It's a very good game. I can't recommend that enough. But I mean, these games are all very similar. There's not a lot to say about any individual game, other than it's Sheeran the Wanderer wandering around, ending up in new adventures. He's kind of like he's basically like Addle in Mystery Dungeon 4.
Does he get in shipwrecks?
Pretty sure there's at least one game where he gets in a ship.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
So then, just looking at the timeline, you got another the Sheeran the Wanderer, and then the Sheeran the Wanderer Game Boy game. In between the next major or next and well, no, there was a couple. Another couple more spinoffs, but the next major spinoff that had multiple entries, Square wanted to get in on this action. I had to stop myself from saying Squeenix because this was not Squeenix yet. Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon. I found it interesting that back in the day, you'd be looking through the used bin at EB Games and see Chocobo's Dungeon 2 amongst it, and thinking, where's Chocobo's Dungeon 1? Well, we never got Chocobo's Dungeon 1. I don't even know if it has a fan translation, to be honest.
Think it does. I'm not sure. It is hilarious that after so many years of renaming titles, renaming number titles to make us not confused, they just stopped that and made us confused.
So I never played the first one. I played the second one, Chocobo's Dungeon 2.
Just in. Big news. There is an English translation for the first one.
Ooh.
Oh, good.
Was that also a PS1 game?
Yeah,
It
PS1. Both of
yes.
them were.
Yep, PS1, yep. Looks like it's on the Internet Archive out here.
I did not. I played the second one, but I do not remember getting very far in it, not because I was bored or anything, but because I just when GameStop slash EB Games was clearing out their PlayStation 1 games, I would just go there and buy stacks of them, for or specifically the RPGs for my collection, and I think I got Chocobo's Dungeon 2 for like a song, and I popped it in and played it a little bit and just got distracted by a shiny object and never went back to it. Most of my time with a Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon game was the one on the Wii, which I think was just called or where is it? Final Fantasy Fables Chocobo's Dungeon. Because back then they were trying to make the Final Fantasy Fables thing a thing for spin-offs.
Just like the from the world of Dragon Warrior.
Because there was a DS game called Chocobo Tales, but that was just a mini game collection. Chocobo's Dungeon was an actual full-fledged dungeon game. And it was so good that it later got remade on the Switch, Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon Everybody.
And the PS4.
Switch and PS4. I've not gotten to that version yet, though I did buy it in Japan the first time I was there in 2019.
That's the version I've mostly played. It's about the same as the Wii version. I think it has some additional content, but it's very, very well done. It's a very good game.
Ch Chocobo ends up with a baby somehow, and this baby grows up almost instantly and becomes a boy. I remember that plot point, and Sid is his companion, and it's the most I don't know how to put it, the most lighthearted Sid in a Final Fantasy game. To be Sid's usually kind of rough and tumble in all of the games, but in this one he's very nice and has a very calm Chocobo. You hear that a lot in the voice acting whenever he talks, and he's I like that version of Sid. He's very quiet. But my favorite thing about this particular mystery dungeon is that you can equip Chocobo with jobs.
It, you know, we're starting to say a lot of these themes happening in the same one. You said you get the Pacific Islanders when the Torneko, that was where he landed. Everybody's in grass skirts and coconut bras and everything. And then that one also had a job system. We're talking job system here. you get the monsters in the Yangus game. They came out after the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon game has the party base. So they kept innovating, and then, hey, let's throw it on every series, which
Yeah.
isn't a bad thing to do. Like, I mean, you're coming up with new gameplay elements, put them out there.
But it's kind of interesting that the different classic Final Fantasy jobs, how much they change the gameplay. Like Black Mage, you're shooting fireballs everywhere, but you gotta watch your mana. But being able to hit things in this game from a distance is a godsend.
Oh, yeah.
The ninja class is kind of weak, but also has very high evasion, so it's not gonna get hit very often. The fighter class is your average tank, and I can't remember what all jobs were in those. Those were the ones that stuck out to me. And I'm pretty sure the job levels stay, or what stays, and it's Chocobo that resets to level one.
I believe that's correct.
Yes, forgive the lack of information. It has literally been almost 2 decades since I played this, because it came out for the Wii on July 8th, 2008. So 18 years since the last time I played this game. But I couldn't get enough of this game. I've been wanting to go back to the Switch one so bad, especially since this we decided to do a Mystery Dungeon themed episode. I've been wanting to go back to M Mystery Dungeon. I've just had trouble settling on which one I want to play. But th this one, aside from the Pokemon ones, is my favorite one that I've played, and aside from some of the non-official games.
It's definitely one of the best by far.
Yeah. Oh, and it has mini games too. Bat shooter, kick darts, fishing, and gardening. You could even use the Wiimote
Jeez.
to point
Yeah,
to move the characters if that's your thing. So, not as much info about the Chocobo's Dungeon as the other ones, mainly because I've only played and finished the one, and I can't even remember if the other ones had the job system or not. I didn't get that far in two, and one I only now know has an English translation. And then some of the odd spinoffs. Nakamura cited the Tower of Draga, the original arcade game, as one of his inspirations for the series. And I didn't know until today that the PS2 Nightmare of Draga is an official Mystery Dungeon game. Has anybody played that?
I have not. No.
Okay. It is in my collection. I will have to check it out. I found that game randomly at an FYE way back in the day. Yeah. And then famously or more infamously, we've talked the Mystery Dungeon games. I'm sorry, the Etrian Mystery Dungeon. I forgot a word there.
Oh, yeah, I was gonna say, wait a minute, what?
Sorry. Been a long day.
No, that's all right.
But yeah, so that one kind of gave you the fun of the customization of a Etrian game,
Yep, build your party.
and was really hard like an Etrian game, and had stuff that could ruin your day just like an Etrian
Yeah.
game.
Yep, there was town building too. I remember like building different buildings, building buildings. Of course, that's what town building is. And yeah, there were different dungeons. I believe it came out after Etrian Odyssey 4, and like Etrian Odyssey 4 had that overworld aspect going for it. This wasn't the same way, but there were definitely different dungeons on the screen that you went down into. The boss encounters were pretty big. I remember that, like having to position people in different places and whatnot. But yeah, just like in Etrian Odyssey, where you had your FOEs that could really, knock the shit out of you and end your day. If you encountered the first time you stepped on a floor, there was no way you were beating a FOE. Just like in this game, they could be defeated because if they got, you'd be like dungeon crawling. You could be like 8 floors down, in the second or third dungeon, and you'd get an alert. Like there's a DOE, it's coming to attack your town, and I would use one of the threads or whatever it was to warp back out there and get back in time so that you could battle it. They were not impossible to kill, but they were so annoying that I was like, I can't get through a dungeon because I keep getting notifications. And if they got to your town, I think they destroyed some of your buildings, which were cost a lot of resources to build and were a pain in the butt. So it was just so bad. Now, I quit 15-ish so hours into the game. I could probably pull up my 3DS playtime. I put quite a bit of time into it, but it was so annoying to keep going back. Now, years afterwards, complaining about it to a friend, he was like, "Oh, each one of those things, like DOEs, if you beat them like three or four times, they never came back." I was like, "What?"
Oh, what?
Yep. And I was like, "Ah, so if I just kept going, it would have not been a thing."
And I think you were supposed to mitigate them by building forts on certain floors and then
Correct, yeah.
placing your party in the
Oh,
forts so
that's
that they
right.
could defend it.
You are correct. That's right. You could leave party members in certain floors. And that's right. They would come up through the floors. So it wasn't that you just went back to your town. It was like, okay, so I'm leaving dungeon four to quickly run over to dungeon two. And as I went down, one was coming up. But you're right. If you built that dungeon and left characters there, they would encounter it,
And I
which.
think that was a way to basically encourage you to level up multiple characters so
Yep, which
that
I
they.
absolute hate doing.
Yeah. No, I'm the same way. Any game that doesn't let me just have my basic four person party, I get kind of frustrated with, especially if they don't have some kind of MP or EXP catch up mechanic.
Yeah, I don't remember if this, I don't, the other ones didn't really.
Yeah.
Yeah, the game felt like it just was going against what you wanted out of that kind of game. Like,
Oh, it could have been great. Like, party building and town building and a lot of Etrian stuff in there. There's a lot of Etrian DNA in there.
it could have been like the perfect combination, right? As because I mean, Etrian is already a hardcore dungeon crawler, so kind of doing a similar thing with like classes from Etrian Odyssey in the Mystery Dungeon could have been perfect. And I thought it would have been my game, and I bounced the hell right did not
So
like
I'm
it.
the only one that's finished it.
I think so.
Yeah, I did not beat it.
Yeah, I
And you know
couldn't
what?
tell
It
you.
must have done pretty crap sales in the US because we never got the second one.
Did you play the second one, Wheels?
Nope, I
Okay.
have it, but I have not played it.
And it was interesting when the last Etrian Odyssey came out. I remember I reviewed Etrian Odyssey Nexus. It was one of the first games I reviewed for our site because we were still getting 3DS games at that time. But the X in Nexus was because it was the 10th Etrian Odyssey game. And if you counted up the four games and then the two untold ones, or wait, no, there was five and then six and then the untolds plus the two mystery dungeons, Nexus was the 10th game in the Etrian Odyssey series. But we only got the nine. We did not get Mystery Dungeon
For
two.
the
And I heard,
best.
yeah, I heard that one even did worse in Japan. That my buddy who told me how I should have gone about beating all of Mystery Dungeon 1 was like, oh yeah, by the way, that second one absolutely bombed. That's why they never brought it over. Probably the first one didn't sell well here either.
I mean, for all we know, that second one fixed all the problems, and none of us will ever know.
I doubt it.
Yeah, it could. You are right. It is the Pandora's box, or
It's probably not, but like I understand people like town building. To me, I don't want that at all. I just wanted a mystery dungeon game where I could build a party and just be a regular mystery dungeon game with FOEs and stuff. But I did not jive with that game at all.
Yeah, that's been the consensus I've always heard. It's just too hard. The mechanics were too hard to wrap your head around, and not a lot of people had fun with it. I had fun with it, but I can see the complaints. But moving on, did anybody play Mystery Chronicle One Way Heroics?
Yes.
Okay, that apparently is a mystery dungeon game, but instead of a
Sort
dungeon,
of.
you're going right.
I think you actually go left.
Or left.
Well, you go You go one way.
Yeah.
And it is very hard. But yeah, I remember Mac recommended it back in the day, so I tried it, and it's tough, but it's a very interesting game.
The Steam reviews are mixed, so yeah, interesting in the you're either going to really like it or you're going to put your controller through the wall kind of game. And see, for some reason, I had it in my head that that game was a sequel to Half Minute Hero. But I think I got that confused with another, the actual sequel to Half Minute Hero. So I'm going to Steam wishlist this. Because it's only $10 on Steam. I'm just curious about it.
Should we talk about the Steam game you should not wishlist?
Yeah, because I was going to ask you guys if you had played any blatant spinoffs that use the exact same mechanic.
Yes, I have some good ones I can talk about.
If
you want to do that before you talk about the garbage.
The pervy ones?
Yes.
There's always a pervy one, isn't there?
Yeah. So Nippon Ichi has made a few, I guess, mystery dungeon lengths, to varying results. But the two that are really amazing are ZHP. Was it like Zeta Hero Project or something?
Yeah.
Came to PSP and eventually Switch, which is like you're a superhero and it's got some interesting mechanics.
You keep dying trying to fight big bad evil guy.
Yeah.
Or I can't remember his exact name, but it was something like Deep Dark Evil Man or just,
something like that, yeah.
Because I asked for this for Christmas, and I always put the whole title on my Christmas list so that my parents could get it for me. And they saw that name and was like, okay. And it's like a... Guys, I know it's a stupid name, but it looks like a fun game. And it was.
Yes.
I could not get enough of that game. I liked that you could pretty much... Well, it's basically taking Mystery Dungeon and adding NIS strategy game craziness to it. Because
yes.
You could mod your entire body and wear just the most ridiculous armor that you could possibly get a hold of.
You can like replace your legs with tank treads.
Yeah.
It's just completely goofy, but just very good.
Mm-hmm. I think the best thing about it was the meta humor. Just making fun of RPG tropes in general. And I also, was it, if you did a new game plus, was it possible to beat the guy like in the first chapter?
I'm not sure. I have never actually beaten that one.
Okay.
Which I need to, because I loved the follow-up to this.
Yeah. It is on one of the NIS collections that came out recently, and I cannot remember which one.
Classics. The second one?
Yeah, they released him weird. Yeah, the second one, because the second one has Makai Kingdom.
Yeah.
So the first one I know had Soul Eater, or not Soul Eater. Man, I am blanking today.
First one was... Penta Brave and
Soul Nomad.
Soul Nomad, yeah. The second one was Maikai Kingdom and ZHP.
Mm-hmm. And then the third one was La Pucelle and Rhapsody.
Yes. Yep. That's all three, yeah.
So, though I've heard bad things about those ports, or that they're pretty much just PS2 ROMs on Switch card.
Yeah,
or...
they're pretty, but I mean, I'll take that over having to play them on the original hardware.
True, and at least it makes them available for your average Joe who doesn't like to emulate or doesn't want to emulate. So,
yeah.
I appreciate that. Now, what is the follow up? Because I don't remember.
The follow up is Guided Fate Paradox, which I reviewed on PS3. Which I'm going to describe the story, and it is as stupidly ridiculous as it sounds. Your main character dies and gets selected to become God, and then has to change the people's fates by going into a simulation with an angel and going through mystery dungeons. Simulations of things happening in the real world that then affect what actually happens in the real world.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. And then there's also the Awakened Fate Paradox.
That is done by a new team, because I think a lot of people left Nippon Ichi after that game, and I've heard bad
Okay.
things. But Guided Fate Paradox is very, very good. One of the best like roguelikes I've ever played. The story, as crazy as it sounds, is actually very good. But what makes it really cool is it takes like all the neat things about ZHP and does some very interesting things, like with the dungeons themselves. Like one of the dungeons you have to go through is every floor is a cube.
Huh.
And as you go to the edge of the screen, it will shift to another side of the cube.
That's actually really cool, adding a third dimension.
Yeah. And then one of them is you're in like a flooded apocalypse type city. So instead of going through hallways between like different rooms, you get in a boat and actually travel to other, like essentially the tops of different buildings. And then I think one of them is actually similar to One Way Heroics, where every floor is you start at one end and you have to just run to the other. I forget what some of the other ones are, because I think the first dungeon going is pretty neat, but it just does everything about roguelikes, mixes in some new stuff, and just it's like just the perfect mix of everything. It's extremely good. And obviously when you die, you go back to level one and whatnot, but there's all kinds of things that level up. Like I think you have like an overall level that goes up as you progress. So it doesn't feel like you ever lose a lot of progress. It's always just moves forward. It's still hard, but not as punishing as some of these games can be. And unfortunately, it's stuck on the PS3, so I can scream till the cows come home for people to play this, but most people just can't. That sucks.
It's probably not.
Now that I got my PS3 emulator going, sure can.
Yeah, it's not probably not even on their PlayStation streaming service that streams PS3 games.
I think it is, actually. I forgot about that. I think it is on there.
Is that service still there?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
It's the top, I think it's the top tier of PlayStation Plus.
Yeah, it is.
But they can only stream PS3 games because I guess they're a bitch to emulate.
But I think I think that is on there.
Yeah, I've been playing Rune Factory Tides of Destiny on my PS3 emulator, which almost exactly 10 years ago I used to do on the stream PS3 to PS4 thing they had. I remember renting it for 90 days, and my son got born within like 30 days of it, and I never used the next 60 days of that.
See, I should have figured out PS3 emulation instead of spending $70 to fix my PS3.
You're better off with the real PS3.
Ah, okay.
Really? Oh,
I think so.
I got it up and running in 20 minutes, and I am
Did
not.
You?
Yeah. Like now, it says it has issues with games, but there's over 1,000 games, and they're all very well documented. What works, what doesn't.
Nice.
I have put 15 hours in a week in a Rune Factory, and it's emulated beautifully. But you know, different
games.
Are
you emulating? Are you emulating on PC?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No, that makes sense. Getting into weird mystery dungeon light games, my wild card is Azure Dreams. I had a friend that had practically every PlayStation RPG on the planet before I got a hold of them, and she'd bring over that game for sleepovers, and we'd play it all night. It's your basic premise, but you're going up a tower in the middle of town, and you can catch and hatch you find eggs in the tower and you hatch them, and you get to take monsters with you. And at the beginning of the game, you're only limited to one monster, but then later on you can bring a collar, you can get a second collar and bring out either two monsters at the same time, or wait until your first monster dies and then bring out the second one. And I believe it's the monster that has to eat the food, not your character in that game. I don't know if any of you guys played Azure Dreams.
No.
It was by Konami. It was a very serviceable roguelike, and definitely one that if you were a PlayStation kid back in the day, you could get easily hooked on, particularly because of the monster raising mechanic a la Pokemon. Your character was the one that got reset to level one when you died or left the tower, but your monster retained its levels. So basically, you would just kind of use your monster to get you through some of the earlier floors every time you reset. And then as you get to the floors that you couldn't beat so easily with your monster, then you kind of level up and all that. And I bring up Azure Dreams because that was the one where the mechanics really clicked. Like, okay, I need to make sure that I have a wind crystal on me, aka the exit item, anytime I enter the dungeon. And when I enter the dungeon, if I am in the slightest bit of trouble, I need to use that thing. And keep a couple of extra weapons handy and make sure that I bring in a handful of the feeding items to feed my monster so that it can kind of keep have my back. And whatever you do, don't let the monster kind of go off on its own like a Pokemon Mystery Dungeon game, because if it does that, then you're screwed. And just stuff like that, the kind of that taught me the basics about games like this. It was a really good game. I'll never forget Finny. It was one of the first games I put on my PSP when I learned how to hack it. And I played that one so much and got to like the very last tower. And I'm sitting there handling my PSP like it's a bomb, because it had a tendency to reset if the battery got jostled. So it's like, oh my God, I'm the farthest I've ever been in this game. I cannot lose that way. And ended up beating the game, and it was a lot of fun, and I felt very rewarded that the mist that roguelike slash mystery dungeon that had taunted me for years, I'd finally finished. And then there's a DS sequel, and it sucks. I
Oh,
think
wait, are you
that's
talking Lunar? What?
no Tao's Adventure, because I realized it was the exact same premise and by the exact same developer, but in their infinite wisdom with the early DS titles, it's only controllable via the touchscreen.
Oh,
And you try to do precise controlling on
no. Nope.
turn-based excuse me, a turn-based monster, I'm sorry, a turn-based mystery dungeon game using only a touchscreen. So that's unfortunate. We'll never get another Azure Dreams. That was a very underrated yet beautiful PlayStation game. Now, I don't know if you guys have any more wild card ones, if you want to talk
I
about
do.
the pervy ones.
Oh, yeah, they're wild pervy cards. So we were looking up other games today and somebody mentioned Omega Labyrinth. So I pulled up, I think this is the newest one, Omega Labyrinth Life, a 2019 game with some mi quite mixed reviews on Steam. Looking at the pictures, oh, it is definitely, walk. You can see the monsters, everything's laid out in the grid there. Heck, you're on basement floor 4 of 7, and it looks like you've got, a couple party members, and I see items on the ground. I see the stairs up in the top corner. Like, looks definitely a mystery dungeon. So I decided to read some of these mixed reviews and see, well, where's the mixed part coming from? So I got 4 reviews to read you, and
Oh
I don't
boy.
know if I should do it in a pervy voice or not, but
Normal voice.
normal voice. Review number one. I can only imagine a reader liking this game if they somehow enjoy bad fan service and bad mystery dungeon games, which I thought was me, but apparently not enough. So it was badder than bad, I guess, for that one. So number two, even if you like big boobs, they really don't get that big. Don't buy or support roguelike slop. Number three here. This game is your basic mystery dungeon game, like Sheeran the Wanderer or Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, except absolutely obsessed with boobs. From what I played, the mystery dungeon gameplay is pretty standard and serviceable, but I just can't get over the boob thing. I mean, I'm no prude. I enjoy shows like High School D Cross D. But I think this game has crossed the line into a place I'm not willing to go to. And finally, no censorship, but Also, no nudity, so I'm not sure what to praise for not being censored. I mean, there's some jiggle physics and lots of panties, but still not recommended due to pricing issues.
Oh, to pricing
this is a
issues.
$60 game.
It's a $60. I mean, there are people that do comment that it goes on sale for like $10 all the time. But yeah, you got a 2019, you know, niche game here that's you can get the $80 light deluxe edition. Oh, saw complaints about that one too, because not all DLC is in the deluxe edition. Don't know why you'd pay $80 for a deluxe edition that is not deluxe. Saw that comment a bunch. I don't know why you pay $80 for this anyway.
Yeah, and I feel like I remember there was an Omega Labyrinth game on the PlayStation that people had a fit about because it got censored.
And you know what? I think, if I'm not mistaken, if that's the one I remember too, it was not censored on Switch.
Mm-hmm.
That was the, you know, Switch. Speaking of Switch, the when PlayStation started censoring and Nintendo started not.
It must have been a nothing burger of a controversy, because I don't see it. Anything about it in the Wikipedia article. So I have no clue.
Well, they had Vita games. The Omega. What do they got? Vita, PlayStation 4. Yeah, I think there were other ones in the series, though, obviously.
I'm also amused that the Omega in the logo symbol is the boob.
Oh, yeah, completely.
So that's amusing. Oh, I know. I want to say the closest I've come to playing a pervy one is one on the Vita that I think was called Sorcery Saga something something in the Great Curry God.
So many curry gods.
Yes.
And I only played that because...
Oh, there it is.
I guess it's on Steam now. At the time, I bought my Vita just to play East 4 Memories of Celceta. And then it's like, okay, what to do next? Well, I guess there's this Curry God game I can get until I can afford Persona 4 Golden, because I wasn't even sure if that was out yet or not. But that game's similar premises as your dreams. You had like the little monster that followed you around that you fed curry to. This one isn't nearly as curvy as Omega Labyrinth, but it's Idea Factory, so it's got some of that kind of ilk, that kind of air to it.
Hey, if you pre-ordered it, you got a bikini download code.
Ah,
you go.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if Nepnep made a cameo or was a downloadable character or something in this.
The limited edition gave you a bib, a plastic spoon, and a plate.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Don't think Nepdep was in this at all. It's actually part of a long-running series.
It does say Maru Monomotori.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, because we just got a new game in that series.
Whoa, going back to 1990, published on the MSX2. Wow.
Yeah, that puzzle game Puyo Puyo actually is a spinoff of that series.
It's kind of interesting what you learn is a spinoff of what.
Yeah.
My goodness, these games go on forever.
I remember back in the day seeing Kirby's Avalanche and screaming, "They ripped off Sega and Mean Bean Machine," not realizing that Puyo Puyo was a thing. But Puyo Puyo started as an RPG, apparently. So we have come full circle. One discovering one spinoff turns into another. We have too many games to talk about to mention pricing. I'm just going to say Sheeran the Wanderer is on Steam and on sale all the time.
It's often on sale on Switch as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon Everybody is on sale all the time. That's a really good Mystery Dungeon game. And there's a world of spinoffs with the exact same gameplay style. I'm sad that Dragon Quest hasn't really went back to that well in a while and given the U.S. some love with that. I don't know, maybe with Sheeran kind of being a thing now, maybe it'll make a return.
Now, Dragon Quest has a history, though, of doing like 3 or 4 spinoffs and then like, okay, we've done that.
Yeah.
You know, you got 2 builders and then they've not done that in like 8 years. Mm-hmm. You've got those, the 3 Rocket Slimes, the... Mori Mori.
Two Musou games.
Yeah, the 2 Musou games, and that ended. You've had four of the Mystery Dungeon that ended. They haven't had a, what is it, the, like, it was Fortune Street on the Wii, but it's
Oh, Itagaki
Itadaki.
Street.
Yeah. And they've had more of those than I could like even recall. They had a Vita one. They had a PlayStation 4 one that had a Korean translation, my friend realized when living in Korea. We only got the one that was on the Wii, but there was a 3DS one with Mario that I played that way and all the way through until I hit credits, just using a sheet that listed all the items on it. So yeah, not surprising that they don't go back to those sometimes, sadly.
Yeah.
But I, the spin-offs sell less than the main line, and pretty much every spin-off series keeps having lower, except the Monsters one, which came roaring back. So,
Yeah. I saw on the Dragon Quest subreddit all the slime Mori Mori fans are disappointed.
As I steer at Wheels's Zoom image there. I have that game. I can turn around and look at that box right now.
I have that game in the treasure chest that came with Dragon Quest Heroes, where I keep all my Japanese 3DS games.
You do the same thing I do, though
Yeah.
I all my Dragon Quest games are in my treasure chest.
Ah,
But
nice.
it's I'm moving them to a newer box because it is my Dragon Quest collection has now outgrown the treasure chest, given all the remakes lately, and I needed room on my Switch shelf anyway. So, I do believe we are ready to take a quick break and then have a round table, unless we had anything else we wanted to add.
Do we have roundtable memories for these games?
I definitely do.
Okay, all right, then we will
So,
roundtable it up.
okie dokie. And welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are now getting into the roundtable. Our favorites, our thoughts, our feelings. That being said, any favorite moment from a Mystery Dungeon game you've played? If you can remember any, that is.
Just Guided Fate Paradox, going through the dungeons and realizing what some of them were, especially that cube dungeon, just was a lot of fun. And just getting to go through that game wondering, well, what the hell are they going to do next? That's kind of a, and I've never played any roguelike that does anything like that game. So that would definitely be my best memory. That and beating Sheeran 6. Because Sheeran games, like I said, they're really hard, so beating that game and like feeling like I did a very good job finishing that game was very satisfying.
Yeah, I think.
Honestly, getting to the end of any Sheeran game is an accomplishment anyone should be proud of.
Yeah, I need to dig out my Vita and boot that up. Just because that game always looked fun to me, I just need the motivation to play it, and maybe
Which
this
game,
will.
Sheeran?
Yeah,
Yeah.
whichever one was on the Vita that came out
That was
here.
five. You can
Okay.
also get on Switch and Steam now
Yeah.
if you prefer to play it there.
Yeah.
Just once you know where the last boss is in that game, if you're playing it on Vita, save it, upload it to the cloud, and then just keep trying. And don't feel bad about doing that
I never feel bad about saves coming.
either. Oh, gosh, no.
My favorite moment, it was in Chocobo Mystery Dungeon Everybody on the Wii, where Chocobo finds a baby, and then that baby, I think you do a dungeon and then you go back to the baby and it like instantly grows up into a boy. Just because at the time I'm thinking, oh, this game's saddling me with a kid or with a baby that I gotta take care of. Oh, okay, it's grown up now. It could at least feed itself. Though that character ended up being a really nice character. Raffaello was his name, but that was just amusing to me. I didn't, because that particular Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon has like a whole bunch of timey-wimey stuff going on. I didn't really get into the plot of it very much, but yeah. that baby growing up instantly thing definitely kind of stuck with me with that game. Because, to be honest, the story in most of the bench mystery dungeons I've played are kind of forgettable, but that one in particular stuck out to me. So there we go, Matt.
It's funny you talk Sheeran. I have distinct memories. I had I think it was called a G6 card. I did not have the R4 for the DS. Everybody was using the R4 card to emulate DS games back in the day. I had a G6 one that plugged into the GBA slot on the bottom of your DS Lite. Like seamlessly, beautifully plugged in there. And I played a lot of random DS games back in the day, just trying them out. And I can envision myself sitting in an Indian restaurant, in the late 00s of 2000, 06, 07, 08, 09, something like that, playing Sheeran the Wanderer. While waiting to get hungry again and go up for another dish at the Indian buffet. Gosh, it was so difficult. So difficult. I never got far. I probably put 5 or 6 hours into that game. And obviously, it resets a lot. So you're not necessarily making progress. But I was not very learned in all that.
Yeah, that game gets a lot easier once you unlock the companions that join you. It makes it a lot easier to repeatedly make progress.
Yeah, I find a lot of the mystery dungeon games that let you have a party tend to be a little bit easier, just as long as you don't let them wander off on their own. Do we have any characters that stick out in any of our favorite mystery dungeon games?
Fat Dragon Quest boys.
Not really. The entire cast of Guided Fate Paradox, because that game is weird.
I'm gonna go with Cid from everybody, just because that's the softest version of the Final Fantasy Cid I have ever seen. But he's kind of nice to talk to. I think part of it is because that game was kind of meant to appeal to the casual crowd that Nintendo was doing back in the day. So, or rather back on during the Wii era. So I don't think that Squeenix thought that the rough, grouchy, drink your goddamn tea, Cid was gonna fly. So I give me a softer Cid every once in a while. So is that all of our favorite characters?
I think so. These aren't really story heavy.
No, I know. It's just going with tradition and all that. Do we have any special memories tied to any of these games, like with you and your Indian restaurant, Matt?
So, golly, I have a list of every RPG that I've ever played and beat, and I've got the month that I beat it going back to forever. I know I beat Final Fantasy One and Dragon Quest One back on the NES and Seventh Saga on SNES, but I didn't really start playing more games until 99, and a little bit afterwards. I for 10 years I was a PC gamer. Doing a lot of city building and everything. But when my girlfriend at the time, I started working, and my girlfriend at the time started being heavily into her master's degree program, and out at all hours of the night because it was a medical program, and studying and practicums and everything. I really dove hard back into it. In 2003, I started playing a whole lot of games. And I can tell you, let's see, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Torneko, The Last Hope was the 10th RPG I ever beat in my life back in 2003. and it was right after I got Dragon Quest VII. I had not even, like I said, I stepped away from RPGs forever. And it right around 2003, I was looking online. I'm like, holy crap, I missed a Dragon Quest game. How did I miss a Dragon Quest game? And bought a used the little small PS1s, the
Oh, yeah.
PSONE, yeah, the little mini ones. Got that Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9, and Dragon Quest 7 on an eBay auction for $100 total. And the second I beat Dragon Quest VII and was like, I screw Final Fantasy right now. I want more Dragon Quest. And I was like, oh, there's a Tornado game. Look at that. What the heck is that? Woo-wee. That took months of trial and error. October 2003, I beat that game. And less than a year later, I would, after blazing through a bunch of Game Boy Color Dragon Quests, I would get the Torneko game for the Super Nintendo and the fan translation. I think that was only like the second fan translation I ever played, and had a blast with it. It was a whole lot easier than the stupid, and to be able to use save states and such, because it was emulated a Super Nintendo game. Like, I still have no idea how I beat Torneko The Last Hope. But 2003, 2004, that's how long ago it's been. And, you know, we talked on the Mystery Dungeon one. It's been almost as long. Last time I rolled credits on a Mystery Dungeon was 2008. So we're going on almost 20 years of not rolling credits in one of these games, but still fond memories of them.
Wheels, did you have any memories?
Yeah, I remember leading up to the Sheeran 6 review. While I was working my way through that game, I found a Sheeran the Wanderer Discord and joined that, which was a pretty interesting crowd. But that was like the first time, and I'm still on this Discord, actually. Cool. It's the first time I'd ever found or even like explored a Discord for such a niche series like that. And it was a pretty interesting experience, like just talking with and looking at people discussing this series. It was a very interesting experience. But yeah, that's where I found out about the patch for Sheeran 4 at the time. And I remember setting up to do a stream of that on the RP Gamer channel, and started playing it and immediately regretted it. But yeah, it was a pretty interesting community to find, and I don't usually like go outside of my comfort zone of communities, so it was a fun experience to go through and eventually share my review in there and discuss Sheeran 6 with some of these crazy super Sheeran fans. It was fun. It was really fun to see that this weird series definitely has its following out there, and it was nice to see.
Yeah, I'm glad that series has kind of has a footprint over here now.
Yeah, and I'm glad like the sales of the past two games have been good enough that you know, we should, assuming they make more games, we should see them right away, because it's definitely a fandom for that kind of game.
I think the indie scene has definitely made the roguelike a very popular genre now.
People
want to try out a lot more things now because of it.
Yeah, and I think just in general, like, people in the West understand the language of that kind of game. Like, going back to those old reviews of like Tornado, and even if you go back and look at the reviews of the first Sheeran DS game, it's like people just didn't understand what this type of game was, and it took a long time. But eventually, like, lots of people got it, and I don't know if there would have been an audience for it sooner, but you know, it happened eventually.
So my memory, my husband, who was my boyfriend back when the Wii was a thing, when he got his own apartment, one of the first things he went out and bought was a Nintendo Wii. And I would, I had my own set of games, or I kind of bought games and left them over at his house for me to play, and one of them was Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon. And there was one Sunday where he was like, hey, you want to come over and hang out and play video games? And I'm like, sure. So I went up there, and we were just kind of hanging out, and he's like, I'm tired. I'm gonna go take a nap. You can play your mystery. That way you could just play your Mystery Dungeon game. Because we're still the type of couple that just pretty much is like, hey, we can just hang out together and not do that kind of stuff. But so I'm sitting in the living room for like a couple of hours playing Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon and playing with his at the time new kitten, who was a little scamp and kept biting my foot while I was trying to play. But I start getting hungry and I go into the bedroom where he's passed out and I kind of tap him on the shoulder and he wakes up and starts head kind of yells a little bit and starts freaking out. I'm like, "Whoa, what's wrong?" He's like, "I forgot you were here." And I was like, "Oh God, I'm so sorry." Felt so bad, but those two memories are forever tied together in my head.
It's like that memory I sent you just last week. I've been playing so much Pokemon Pokopia. One morning before work, at like 5 a.m., my wife like rolled over and smacked me in the face as she flapped her arm over me, and she like is like half laying on me, and for a good 10 minutes I was so mad about like two different environments got messed up, and now these Pokemon are going to want to move out, and it destroyed the house that I built that was had the walls and the and it was around 5:10 in the morning that I'm like, what the hell am I thinking about here? Oh my God, I've been playing too much Pokopia in my mind, like in bed, and like I literally was like, I need to move my wife like one space over and two spaces down. That will make the two different environments, and this Pokemon will come back. Totally get it in your head.
Yeah, one of those instances where you forget that you stopped playing that hours ago.
I was like, yeah, like, wait, whoa. It's the next day. Come on.
Like that what one time I was playing too much GTA and saw a cop car and was like, I could jack that car. Oh crap. I shouldn't do that. I
Don't do
stopped playing
that.
that hours ago. Yeah, always funny times, but poor husband. I think no, wait, no. I can't remember if I beat that game before I ever moved in with him, or maybe no. I think I finally finished it when I did eventually move in with him. But yeah, good times. And that is a conclusion to Mystery Dungeon May. So what do we have next, Matt? You're leaving town?
It's MMO. Matt Mason him out.
That means we've got World of Warcraft, Mists of Pandaria, and Final Fantasy XIV Endwalker coming up. Oh, hours and hours of story summary.
I'm going to be on the road somewhere in the middle of Colorado and have to edit a 5.5 hour podcast.
Plotties notes, summarize faster, don't record 2 days.
Yeah, that is
Gotcha.
my. I put those notes in there because Tam said something like, "Oh, should we? There's a lot, here. Should we maybe book two different days for this?" So I definitely put my notes right there for Endwalker. Talk about the end. Don't walk your way through 4 hours of story.
Think I'm going to have a request for a MMO episode next year. I think you know which game I'm talking about.
Dragon Quest X.
No.
Oh, it's her destiny not to know.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That took
Yeah.
a second. Sorry. Yeah, I've had a long, rough day. I think it's time to end the show. But tune in a pair of weeks where we will be talking about my second favorite expansion of all time, Mists of Pandaria. The calm before the storm, before things started to get kind of bad in WoW. That being said, thank you, Matt, and thank you, Wheels, for hanging out
Sure.
with us.
Of
And
course.
thank you, listener, for joining us for Mystery Dungeon May. We'll see you in a pair of weeks where we start MMO month. Matt Mason out. Thanks for hanging out with us. We shall chat at you later and hope you have a wonderful rest of your week.
Matt Mason out.
Bye-bye.